This is an interview with Uncle Roy Mundine on the 25th of April 2014. So, Uncle Roy, could you just tell me your full name and when and where you were born and who your mob is, please?
Right. My name's Roy Leonard Mundine, and I was born in Grafton, New South Wales, and my people come from Boyugal.
Can you tell me when you joined, what year did you join the armed forces?
I joined the army in about 1958.
And what inspired you to join the army?
Well, I was always interested in the army and all that, and I just went and applied and I was accepted and I joined up.
Mm-hmm. And I believe you were deployed overseas. Can you tell me some of the places?
Yeah, well, I was posted to Malaya. I did a couple of years in Malaya. And I did a stint in England, and I also did I went to New Zealand for a few months, and also I was in Vietnam twice. I was there in about 66 and 69 in Vietnam, and I was posted in different states in Australia and all that business.
And can you tell me about some of the experiences that you had on any of these overseas missions?
Oh, well, in Malaya, we were fighting the communist terrorists and all that business, and we used to go out patrolling in the jungle all the time and different other things and exercise. We used to do a lot of training and all that. I mean, one time we went to Borneo training, and then we come back and we continued on doing that patrolling against the communist terrorists in Malaya.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was posted back to Australia, and I was out at Holsworthy for a while, and then I went to parachute school at Williamtown. I was there for 12 months or something, and then went back to the battalions at Holsworthy, and then I went off to Vietnam, my first trip into Vietnam. And I came back from that, and then we trained for another about 12 months or so, and then we went back again, and we come back from there, and I got wounded on that second trip, and then while I was there, we went to New Zealand on various exercises and all that, and then I was posted to the Royal Military College at Duntroon on the staff, and then I come from there, I went up to Queensland, I was posted up there.
Mm-hmm. So you've been to quite a few places.
Yes, yeah. That's right.
And what was, you're talking about parachute school there before.
Yeah.
What was that? You learned how to
parachute. We were in the parachute business.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when I was in England, I was with the 1st Battalion of the Parachute Regiment. Yeah.
Was it fun?
Yeah, it's okay, yeah.
I've always wanted to do it.
It's a bit different, but it happened in military with hundreds of people jumping out of an aeroplane, I can tell you. With all that equipment on.
Yeah. Okay, and so you went to Vietnam twice.
Yes.
Is that, I thought, somebody explained to me that they used to replace people every 12 months, is that correct?
Or you got word to come home early or something like that, and then you could go again. It all depend.
Mm-hmm.
Some people stayed a bit longer, some people did a bit shorter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But when you went with those battalions, generally you went 12 months or maybe a bit month or two over or month or two less.
Mm-hmm. And what was your actual role in the army?
I was in the infantry, of course, and I was a section commander and in the infantry. And I did, and of course, I was a quartermaster. And
did you ever experience any racism in the army?
No, not particularly. And that, I think they were all, most of them were all in the same boat, all the people who were there, because, as they always say, misery needs a companion when things are going tough.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And what about when you returned to Australia? There was no racism when you returned?
No, not in the units that you were in and all those things. You might have found it outside in the civilian world, I think it's still there today, actually.
Mm.
And that, what's his name? I know a lot of white blokes pointed it out to me, and that,
Yeah.
Blokes, you know, the shop, one bloke said to me one day, you'll always serve last and all these things. And that's a thing that most, a lot of people don't realise.
Yeah. So have you been involved in the Black Diggers project and the march before?
No. I've been away most of my life. Mm-hmm. And I just happened to run into Harry, and Harry got me to come into that thing at Hyde Park a few times, which I have. And that when I'm here, I go in there, and that, because he does a pretty good job, Harry. And you know, that was it. I used to run in a few Aboriginal people in the army, of course, and that, because they young blokes and all that. And I got to know a few got killed, but I enjoyed myself in the army, because I did about 36 years in the army. I was a warrant officer class one, and a lot of power in that job.
So do you think there should be more awareness in the community about the work of the, you know, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander servicemen and women, the contribution that they've made to
Well, it's always good in that, you know, and good stuff about it, what they did and what that. And it's not only with the Aboriginal, but some of those other units and that, you know, it's the same with them. People should talk, all you do is hear about certain things or units and that. I don't think a lot of Aboriginal people understand what those blokes done, you know, especially the older fellas and that, you know, that were around. I don't think they realised what those blokes done. And it's just awesome in that, you know, when you think about it, especially people who were in the First World War, it was a mince. They were just thrown into a grinder, you know. And over the years and that, people have fought for things for them and that, and they've got a few benefits and all that, which they never ever did before. But I remember Gandhi, you know, the Indian, famous Indian bloke.
Yeah.
Well, when he was a young lawyer in South Africa in the late 1800s, he went there as a young lawyer to defend people. And he got into trouble with the system there, and the South Africans told him that they were hoping to bring in the policy like New South Wales. And so he formed his own unit in the Boer War, and he became the Sergeant Major. You know, and that was probably the thinking of that day, and some of it's still around today. But I never had any problems with those sort of things. And I had some really, really good people I worked with, and that, and my bosses were really, really good. But you'll always get that. And especially if they're losing an argument or something, they'll always bring these things, some people, you know. I just ignore them. At the end of the day, I got back at them anyway. I was in the position to do that. But, yeah. And in some places, like in Queensland, parts of Western Australia, it was rife, you know. It was for some people. And that, I remember some of the officers were bloody, in the army, were quite horrified about some things, that, you know, and they got stuck into people about it. And, but they, you know, as I said, you know, when you're up at that point again, misery needs company, and you meet some great people. Like I was talking a lot today, they're quite good people.
So you think the armed forces are a good career for Aboriginal
people? Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely in that. There's so many things you can do in that, you know, and so many courses you can do. And I think over a period of time in that, there probably would be a lot of young blokes in that come through now that have got good jobs. You know, some have went to ADFA and, you know, Duntroon and all those things, like, what's his name, Smith? He was a colonel, a half colonel, and then came from up around Newcastle. He went through Duntroon.
Okay.
He was one of the chief logisticians when they went to Timor and those places. And, you know, which is pretty good. And bit by bit, you know, they get up and all that. And, of course, nowadays the army's different than what I was. It's much more politicised and academically and all that business. Yeah. Which is a good thing in a way, but a bad thing in another way, because at the end of the day, when the crunch comes, and that no matter how much education you've got now, whatever it is, people die, you know, and get badly mauled and bashed and all that.
Mm.
But as I said, I enjoyed my time, and I met some great blokes and all that business. And mm. I haven't seen for ages. I've seen some of the day, actually. We all had a yarn and that. And I met Stewie Yo-Yo, you know, he's a part of Aboriginal Island from Rockhampton today. He lives out of South Coogee, he's telling me. I hadn't seen him for ages. He came up and he said, "Remember me?" I said, "Remember me, sir?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Oh, God." I said, "You don't talk to us. You're one of those eastern suburbs people." And he laughed. He said, "Get out with you." Yeah. But he was there today, which was good to see him in that. Yeah. But, and of course, you know, there's a lot of people. Some people only stayed a little while. Some people didn't. You know, there was a few times that we had a, I remember one Aboriginal bloke, he'd been nearly 20 years in the army, he wanted to get out. And his sergeant came and spoke to me about it. And I said, "Well, try and keep him here till he gets to 20 years up so he can get his pension and all that." Mm-hmm. And he was determined to go, but we ended up getting around that, and, you know. And I seen him years later, he lives in Western Australia today, and he's mm-hmm. glad that he stayed. You know?
Yeah.
I said, you know, I said, "You don't realise it." I said, "Even if it's only $50 a week coming in, it's coming in all your life."
Mm.
You know, so you've got to have the cash flow. Mm. But as time goes on, there'll be a lot of them come through. Like in New Zealand, there's even Maori blokes who are generals and everything, and that. But they've always been a few years ahead of us. And I don't, and in ways, it's right throughout the Aboriginal community. I don't think we will ever advance that quick. Because we're all these little groups, and they're all fighting against one another instead of all pulling together,
mm.
you know. And you only have to go back to in the early, like in the 1920s or whatever it was, when what's his name, Maynard and Kennedy and all those places, and come out of the First World War, started those things, and that was all little separate groups. Well, they just don't work,
mm.
but of course. The political system, and they just cut you down. You know, it's like people have got these ideas about, you know, there's this thing about the amount of people, Aboriginal kids especially, committing suicide. Well, that's not only Aboriginal kids, but in the wider community, and that, and the government's not particularly interested in it, you know, mm-hmm. that it, which is a quite, it's quite a sad thing, especially when, especially young people or even old people, when they can't have no one to talk to. And that I always say to people, you don't need a psychiatrist. All you need is a family and friends to talk to. Those days are gone. There are too many twitting and on the phone. All that. Well, yeah. That doesn't save you in the long run.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just need a good old yarn to somebody.
That's right. Yeah. And some of these problems, some people have got are minor things that turn into monstrous things, you know. And that, and the sad fact of it is that, as I said, people commit suicide or self-harm themselves and that. And it's probably getting bigger instead of, probably getting worse instead of cutting down.
Mm.
And that, and there's a lot of young people in it. And that, but they, but their education is their big thing. Education is their pathway through life. And I don't mean by going to university and getting some kind of a degree and sitting on your ass in university writing papers. Get out in the community. As I said, I'd like, go out where those white people are. They've got all the money. And you need money to do all these projects.
Mm.
You know? And you've got to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that, but and you can get into places in when your job's and all that, where you can do a lot of things. Yeah. Do a lot of things. And that, and it's quite interesting what you can do, I can tell you that.
Mm. Do you want to tell me a little bit about what you like, what you do now? I know you do a lot of community work, and
I go and help do a bit of raise a bit of money for charity things and that, you know, mm-hmm. and a few other things like that. Yeah, and I used to help run the football and all that.
Yeah,
but I do a lot of travelling.
Yeah, I know.
I like to travel.
Yeah,
I've travelled the world numerous times, and I always say to young people, don't end up like your parents. Sitting there with the blinkers on, go out and see the rest of the world. You'll find they're not much different to you and I. Mm. And I said, you think you're poor? Wait till you go and see some of their countries, but they are happy. Really, really happy. But, and they enjoy themselves. I said, yeah. As I just say in the army, if you went to an area and they thought the baddies were there, I'd say, no, look at those kids out there playing, enjoying themselves. I said, get in good with those kids and they'll tell you what's going on. Mm. Yeah. And that, you know, and that's interesting. And you've got to be able to be a man manager. Because without being able to manage your people and look after them, care and maintain them and that, you'll never get anything done. You know, there are certain times where you've got to pull someone aside and give them a few bars you'll remember me by. But they all got to pull as a team, especially in the army. If one bloke goes down in the army in any of those big situations, a whole lot of you go down. You know, you will all end up dead or badly more. So you've got to all pull together.
Mm, teamwork.
Yeah.
And what? So what does Anzac Day mean to you? You talked a little bit before about, you know, catching up with old friends and things
like that. Well, yeah, it's always good to see how they go, and you hear all these bad vibes about people. When you see them, they all think they're 17 again. And those things and that. Well, Anzac Day was a... Well, I've never been into Anzac Day things and that. You know, it was a terrible thing that happened and all that business. Not only we could be... But what's his name? And of course, it was a different time years and years ago and all that business, you know, for Mother England and different other things like that. But the Western Front after that was horrific. It was horrific, the amount of people who died. Mm. It was like going into a grinder, the amount of people that died in that. And also on Anzac Day, I got blown up one day in 1969. Oh, yeah. I was still on an Anzac Day on the 25th of April 1969. And that's not a reason why I don't remember it. And although I'd forgotten all about it till a bloke mentioned it. Day. Do you remember the day when we had that thing? You got blown. I said, yeah. But I just went to hospital for numerous months and operations and just got out and got on with life. I never, ever, what's the name? Because if you don't, like, self-motivate yourself, and that, or sit, and if you sit around smelling sorry for yourself and all that, you're not going to survive.
Mm.
You know, especially in the day's world. It's dog eat dog and all that business. And no one wants to hear about your problems. They've probably got more problems than you. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way of the world these days.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I've enjoyed myself. I still enjoy myself and all those things. And, yeah.
That's the most important thing.
Oh, yeah.
As long as you're enjoying life.
And that's what I said to some of them. I said, the only person I've got to please is myself. I couldn't give a damn a rest of them. I don't have to worry about that. I'm not in the army anymore. Well, you had to worry about all these people and that. And especially when I became the quartermaster, I had to have all this equipment and get them from point A to point B and bloody billions of dollars worth of stuff and bloody explosives and, you know, it was awesome. And it was one of the Walters in the day. He said, people don't realise the bloody problems you've got. I said, yeah, I know. And of course, you've got to have everything there for them, you know, from bloody shoelaces to needle and pins and feed them, clothe them. And you've got to get all these things there so they're ready, so that they land on the ground and ready to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And the ammunition, you've got to get all the ammunition. Although the ops officer generally helps you do that. Sometimes if it has that many problems, he can't do it, so you pick up the slack. Yeah.
All right, excellent. Thank you so much for your time, Uncle Roy. Is there anything else you wanted to share today?
That's it, you know. But all those who go in the military and that, especially blokes who stay in there for a while and get a bit of rank and all that, they should keep an eye out for all those young Aboriginal blokes and that, and make sure, pull them in again, point them in the right direction.
Mm.
Otherwise, they get out there with their mates and that, and they won't know, well, they get left behind.
Yeah.
And they also got to remember, it's more money for them for a start and more better jobs. And also, it's good learning for them because you can do all those education courses and trade courses and all that business. And at the end of the day, if they do 20-odd years or more, they get a pension, another pension, and they see. And it might be that much. It all depends what rank they are and how much they pay into it. And they it's money coming in, you know. And that, of course, probably the military is one of the first people to have like a superannuation scheme.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, they started theirs about 1940s.
Yeah.
Long before even the politicians were looking for a job. But they, and it's probably a lot better now for them in that, you know, which is quite good. Yeah.
All right, excellent, thank you.